Good morning again. We just, Kara and I, and Dan and Cheryl also, just made the journey back down this morning from Crouch. Our young adults, young families group is up there in the Rattlesnake Campground at having a camp out. And they got up, we got up Friday night or Friday afternoon, up there yesterday, had a little bit of rain, but would ask you guys to remember them in your prayers as the bulk of the group comes heading back down this afternoon. It was a great weekend, good time just to get to know each other and spend some time just in fellowship with one another. Remind you of, toward the end of the summer here, another journey for us to be taken together is our family retreat up at Trinity Pines, coming August 4th through 6th. The registration table is up and ready to roll out here. If you have a chance, go ahead and get registered. If you attended last year, you know what a great event this is. If you didn't, you need to try it this year. It's a great weekend just being together, playing games, and getting cheated at volleyball. No, it's not. It's fun. It's a great weekend. So, like I said, the registration table is out there. Another journey, a journey that's happening even sooner than that, just in a few weeks, about 3 weeks, Jared is going to be taking a lot of our teenagers and some parents and some teenagers from the Valley to Mountain States, to Longmont, Colorado, to work at Mountain States Children's Home for a week. That is a great trip. It's a lot of work. A lot of work goes into it. A lot of work goes into it when you're there, but it's a great trip. And here's where you come in. As usual, if you've been around in this congregation very long for these trips, you know we ask for water bottles. So if you'd like to purchase a case of water bottles and bring them up to donate them to the trip so they can take with water bottles and or Gatorade. Gatorade or like Gatorade or Powerade or something. I was going to say some sort of energy drinks, but don't bring Monsters or Red Bulls. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking electrolytes type drinks. Bring Gatorades, Powerades. If you bring a case or whatever you want to donate, just put them in front of Jared's door. He's gone this week, but we'll get him inside his office and fill his office up full of water. So that's coming in just a few short weeks. All of a sudden, summer stuff is here. I want to talk to you this morning about another journey, though. A journey that was described just a little bit in the text that Avery read for us this morning, beginning in Luke chapter 9. Verse 21, where Jesus begins to talk very openly about his journey, the journey that he's taking in the last few weeks, last several months of his life, the journey to Jerusalem. And this is an interesting point in the way that Mark does this as well as Luke. Actually, in the Synoptic Gospels, all three of them, you see this beginning of this very intentional journey that Jesus begins to make. Scholars refer to this as the closing ministry of Jesus. The scene in Jesus' ministry shifts from the northern area of Galilee to everything in this last 6 months takes place around Jerusalem. Now, we'll see Jesus teaching outside of Jerusalem, in Perea, in Bethany. We see some amazing things. But the focal point of these last few weeks is Jerusalem, and Jesus knows it, and he knows what's coming. What's interesting about this is, like I said, this whole period takes place in about 6 months. It's from the Feast of Tabernacles, we see in John 7, we'll see in here in just a minute, to that final Passover, and it's a period of about 6 months. So for 2.5 years, Jesus has been conducting his ministry going all over that area. But this last 6 months, the focal point is Jerusalem. And more specifically, Jesus knows what the actual focal point is. Again, this is called the closing ministry of Jesus. And the kind of key verse that begins this is Luke chapter 9, verse 51, where Luke says these words. He says, when the days were coming to a close for him to be taken up, he determined to go to Jerusalem. A literal translation there is he set his face to go to Jerusalem. This was a very intentional journey for Jesus. This was, he knew in his mind. And as we've seen, as you've read throughout the gospel, you see Jesus is a little bit vague about what's going to happen to him. And in fact, there's other points we just read that he says, here's what's going to happen to me, don't tell anybody. At this point, it shifts. And he begins to be very clear about what his destiny is. His apostles begin to really finally see this, it seems like, a little bit. But this, in all the obstacles that Jesus faces, even in these last 6 months, what we see is nothing deters him from this ultimate destination of Jerusalem and ultimately the cross. Now, I think it's important for us to see this. I think we need to understand that when Luke uses this expression that Jesus set his face to go to Jerusalem, that this tells us that Jesus was very intentional about this. Jesus was determined to go to this point that he knew was going to be his death. He knew what was coming. He knew that he was going to be beaten. He knew that he was going to be scourged. He knew that he was going to deal with a ridiculous trial and ultimately be nailed to a cross. So when it says he set his face to go to Jerusalem, we have to understand this wasn't an inevitable journey. This wasn't just the next leg of Jesus' journey. This was purposeful. We have to understand, too, that as we sing so often, we sing the song, he could have called 10,000 angels. He could have. This didn't have to go. He understood that. He could have bailed out on this, but he knew this was God's plan, and it was time to begin that final march to the cross. So I want us to look this morning and look at the significance of this and look at some of the pivotal things that happened, some of the pivotal ways that Jesus, even his approach to his ministry, even changes in these last 6 months. And I want us to see this because, I think it's important that we understand that there are some transformative lessons that we can learn from Jesus and from this journey to Jerusalem if we'll just take the time to apply them to our daily lives. So let's look first at this idea of just what was this? Why is Luke so makes such a distinction that he says, now it's time. This is the time to begin this journey to Jerusalem. What we have to understand is this journey to Jerusalem held a very significant spiritual, very significant prophetic importance. This was something that wasn't, this wasn't just happenstance. This wasn't just Jesus just decided to be near people he knew around Bethany, to be near Mary and Martha and Lazarus. That wasn't it. His purpose was to fulfill God's plan, to fulfill that plan that was established, as Paul tells us in the letter to the church in Ephesus, that was established before the foundations of the world. This is the culmination of that plan as Jesus begins this march to Jerusalem. But Jesus also knew, as I mentioned a minute ago, he knew what was going to happen to him. But he also knew the Old Testament texts that even described the Isaiah 53 that talked about him being despised and rejected. He's experienced some of that throughout this initial first two and a half years, but now it's going to get very, very real. It's going to get very, very direct and blatant. He understood what Matthew 1:18 verse 22 means when it says the stone that the builders have rejected. He's about to face the ultimate rejection by his own people. And he begins the journey to Jerusalem anyway. This was an intentional journey that involved each of us. Because this was the purpose. Jesus' purpose was to reconcile humanity back to God. Knowing what was coming, I think I would have pulled a Jonah in this situation. Let's go the other direction as quickly as possible. Because I know Jesus knew what was coming in Jerusalem. In the spring of 1846, a group of American pioneers migrated heading toward California from the Midwest. and had a series of mishaps literally even before they left, and it just got worse. And the group was stranded in the Sierra Nevada mountains in the winter, spring and winter of 1846 and 47. This was the Donner Party. I'm not going to tell you all the things that happened with the Donner Party. That's what Google's for. But it was bad. And it was really, really bad. Because they weren't prepared for what was on their journey. In April of 1912, a ship set out from Southampton, England, on its way to New York City. The ship that was supposed to be unsinkable sat out with over 2,200 people on board, came across an iceberg that they didn't think, the owners, the captain of the ship, didn't think could even do any damage to the Titanic. They found out they were wrong. Over 1,500 of the people on board died when the Titanic sank. Do you think if the Donner Party would have known what was coming their way, they would have done something a little bit different? Do you think if White Star, the company that owned the Titanic, do you think if they would have had any idea what would happen if you happened to graze an iceberg and it tears the side of your ship up? Do you think they would have done something differently? How about all those passengers on board the Titanic? As the guy's taking their ticket, would say, "Thank you, welcome aboard. We're gonna sink. Welcome aboard. We're gonna sink. Don't you think people would have abandoned ship even before you left the dock? But they didn't know what was coming their way. When Jesus set his face to Jerusalem, he knew. He knew what was coming his way. And he went anyway. We sing that song, He Still Came. Very powerful song, talking about the fact that knowing everything that was about to happen, he still came to this earth. To use it properly in grammar in this context, we'd have to say he still went. He knew what was coming when he headed to Jerusalem, but he still went anyway. He knew the rejection. He knew the mistreatment. He knew the ultimate end. But what he also knew is that his sole purpose here on this earth was to fulfill his Father's plan. It didn't matter what was coming. It didn't matter how bad it was going to be. It didn't matter how much he was. And he even tells them, he says, the Son of Man is going to be turned over and he's going to have to suffer at the hands of men. But he knew. And he still went on this journey to Jerusalem. Fully aware of what was coming his way. So what was coming his way? Let's look at, as we think about this journey to Jerusalem, what are some of the things that he endures? What are some of the things that he encounters in this last 6 months? This last 6 months is full of some of the greatest teaching moments from Jesus. I don't know if you can even say that. Can you say greatest when you talk about? They're all great. But they're all great. There's some teaching moments in here. This is where he gives, in this time frame, is when he gives the parable of the Good Samaritan, the workers in the vineyard. This is his encounter with Zacchaeus. Some of the greatest teaching moments that we all remember from people who aren't in church every Sunday. A lot of these, you know the Good Samaritan parable. In that last 6 months of Jesus' life. This is where he does some of his most amazing healing. This is where he heals the blind man in John chapter 9. This is where he heals Bartimaeus, another blind man. This is also in this time frame where he also is the resurrection of Lazarus. This is right toward the end of his life. So some incredible things that Jesus is doing as he's making this journey to his ultimate end. And I point all this out just to show us that even in that last 6 months, when he knows what's coming, when he knows his ultimate end is going to be awful, he's still at work. Have you ever had something coming in? I mean, maybe it's like, a dentist appointment or something that doesn't even compare, but something coming in the next couple of days and it's all you can think about. You kind of fret and you're like, oh, I can't work today because I'm so worried about this happening or so worried about. Jesus wasn't fretting. Jesus wasn't spending his time wringing his hands. He knew what was coming, but he was still teaching, still healing, still performing miracles, doing everything he could to draw people to him, even in those last days. And as he gets to Jerusalem, as the time really comes to an end, or closer to a close, in Luke chapter 19, verses 29 and following, we also see this moment where Jesus shows such humility. And he rides the donkey, he rides the donkey colt into Jerusalem, showing that even as the one who is about to redeem all of mankind through this incredible suffering he's about to deal with, shows that he doesn't want the higher spot. He doesn't want to be put up on a pedestal. He rides in on a donkey. And as he gets into Jerusalem, so we see his humility. We see the lowliness of Jesus. But then as he gets into Jerusalem, he goes to the temple, and we see yet another side of Jesus. We see in Luke chapter 19, verse 45 and following, where he comes in and he throws the money changers out of the temple, these people who are making a mockery of what the temple is supposed to be about. And we see from Jesus, we see this underlying message that where God lives, where God abides, you don't mess with it. You don't make it into a place that you design it the way you want it. And Jesus says, get out of my Father's house. This is not what is supposed to be happening here. We see the intensity of Jesus, again, even in these last few days. And in those final days, he shares the Last Supper with his apostles and institutes the Lord's Supper, which we just observed this morning. And he reminds them that his blood is the blood of this new covenant, this new beginning, this new arrangement with God, that his blood, that his sacrifice, that is literally the next day, is the very core. And he reminds the apostles, and through them reminds us, that in those moments where we observe the Lord's Supper, that it's a time that we should remember. It's a time that we should remember his incredible sacrifice, but it's also a time we should remember our unity. We should remember our ultimate purpose as well. And after the supper, the text tells us that he then journeys to Gethsemane and has that incredibly intense moment in the garden where he tells those three closest apostles to wait for him, and he goes off by himself and he prays, and we see such humanity in that moment. We see such what this struggle really is to the man, Jesus, where he sweats like drops of blood because he's so agonized about what is about to happen. The pinnacle of the journey that he began knowing what was coming. And he prays in the garden, and he prays that this cup might pass from him, knowing that ultimately he still has to finish the plan. And at the end of this, if you will, this scene is when Jesus is then arrested. And he's taken off and put through a trial that was completely illegal, should never have happened the way it happened. Pilate tries, John records, Pilate tries five times to say, What do you want me to do with this guy? Even Pilate couldn't figure out a way to make this journey not end the way it was going to end. And ultimately, Pilate washes his hands of Jesus' fate. And Jesus is crowned with a crown of thorns and is clothed with a robe just to mock who he is. And he's slapped and spat on. And ultimately, he's nailed to a cross where he hangs until he dies. Knowing what was coming, he set his face to Jerusalem. Went to the cross so that people like me could have their sins forgiven. Went and died on that cross so people like you could be bought back into a relationship. Could have mercy extended to us, grace extended to us that not a one of us deserves. Knowing that was coming, he went to Jerusalem. But wait, there's more. As we sang in a few of our songs this morning, God's plan wasn't going to be thwarted just simply by physical death. The grave wasn't going to hold Jesus. It wasn't going to end there. 3 days later, the tomb's empty. 3 days later, Jesus goes from being a well-known martyr to the one who changed the world because the tomb was empty. He came back from the grave, Acts tells us, spent 40 days with his apostles, teaching them all the things pertaining to the kingdom of heaven, all the things that you and I now know, are able to know. So really, the journey didn't end in Jerusalem. The journey ended at the right hand of God, where Jesus is now. As our mediator, as our intercessor, as the one who stands before God on our behalf, knowing that he made that journey to Jerusalem so he could stand there before God and say, Clint Davison, he's okay. I mean, he's not, but because of me, he's okay. Because I've taken care of the sin problem. So what do we learn about Jesus? As we look at these steps that Jesus takes along the way, when we talk about our theme for the year of getting to know Jesus, what do we learn about him specifically? Not what he did. What do we learn about Jesus as we look along the steps of this journey? What we see, obviously, is Jesus absolutely exemplified humility and servanthood. I mean, we've already seen the triumphal entry, which I've always thought that was interesting that it's a triumphal entry. Yes, the crowd was completely in support, but it's the same crowd that just a few days later would be changing from Hosanna, save now, to crucify him, crucify him. And he comes in on a donkey. But we also see in John chapter 13, on the night before he is betrayed and arrested and everything, the night before he spends time washing his apostles' stinking, dirty feet. And he tells them, I'm doing this to give you an example of what it means to really serve. And he tells them, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. If you really want to be like me, you'll behave like me. And he gets down on his knees in front of these guys. One guy who's going to deny him. One guy who's going to betray him. Other guys who are going to run off and leave him alone. And he washes their feet because nobody else would stoop so low to wash each other's feet. Jesus is a picture of humility. But we also see in those moments that things get a little tense that Jesus is also an incredible model of endurance and perseverance. Even when in the passage that we just read in Luke chapter 9, you don't have to get very far to see Jesus is going to have some obstacles. In this same context, in John's gospel, in John chapter 7, right about this moment, when he sets his face to Jerusalem, is when his brothers say, why don't you go to Jerusalem for the feast? You want to have a big crowd and put on a big show, why don't you go? And Jesus is like, you guys don't even get this. So he takes ridicule and taunting from his own brothers. But in Luke chapter 9, verse 51, he determined to go to Jerusalem. Then verse 52 says, he sent messengers ahead of himself, and on the way he entered a village of the Samaritans to make preparations for him. But they did not welcome him because he determined to journey to Jerusalem. So immediately when he sets his face to Jerusalem, he's rejected even by the Samaritans. Though, I mean, it starts off badly. And as he comes into Jerusalem, he deals with we see in Matthew 23, where he has this encounter with the scribes and Pharisees that gets incredibly intense. But Jesus never quits. He has his own apology. Peter tells him, listen, I'll never let you die. I'll die before you, I'll let you die. And Peter goes, and Jesus says, oh, really? Here's what you'll do, is you'll deny me three times. And Jesus keeps going. Nothing's going to keep him from doing the Father's will, even though it ultimately means a horrible death. But he perseveres through it all. But we also see from Jesus, which really is the sum of all of it, I think, is his courageous obedience. You know, I wrestle sometimes with the song, He Could Have Called 10,000 Angels. Because sometimes I think, could he have really? I mean, could Jesus in his nature really have pulled the ripcord and just said, no, let's do something else? I don't know. I mean, I guess that's a possibility. But we do see in the garden, in Luke chapter 22, verse 42, when he's in that moment of just agony, and he prays three times. Do you ever have, those of you with children, do your kids ever say, hey, can I have some ice cream? And you say, no. And they come back later and go, can I please have some ice cream? And you still say no. And then they come back and they flop on the floor. Ice cream. Okay. We had, I won't tell you which one, but one of our sons, since he's not here, I can tell you this. When he was a little bitty, he would ask for something like ice cream. And then he'd say, okay, I got rejected. So he'd come around the back door and go, is there something cold and creamy in the freezer I could maybe have? And it's like, no, the answer is still no. And I don't mean to make light of that by any means, but I think of the same kind of interaction with Jesus and the Father. Because he asked three times, is there some other way we could do this? Is there some way we could do something different? But what does he ultimately say? Not my will, but your will be done. That is God in the flesh on the earth, about to be scourged, beaten, mocked, ridiculed, and crucified, saying, I'd really rather this be done differently, but it's not my call. At the conclusion of this journey, Jesus is the picture of ultimate surrender. So what can we learn about ourselves? As we have traveled this road with Jesus, just very quickly, what can we take from Jesus for our own journey? I think one of the things, if we're going to take some lessons and apply them to ourselves, one thing that we see Jesus emphasized over and over in this closing ministry was we've got to count the cost. In the passage that Avery read back in chapter 9, verse 23, Jesus said to them all, if anyone wants to follow after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. Think about what he's saying there in this context. In a few verses, it's going to tell us he sets his face to Jerusalem, knowing where he's going. And before this, just it seems within just a short time before that moment, he's telling his followers, you've got to do what I'm about to do. Because I'm about to do it for real, you're never going to have to be nailed to a physical cross but you better be willing to take one up every day. We have to understand, as followers of Jesus, we're called to selflessness. And I think sometimes that's a concept, maybe that's even a word, that we throw around in kind of a church setting. But that's what Jesus is saying when he says, you've got to be willing to take up your cross every day. That means he's saying, especially to his audience, who would understand this whole idea of being hung on a cross, he's telling them, you've got to be ready to die for me every day. That means you put away your selfish desires. You put away the mindset of, well, I want to live like this. I feel like I should get to do this. I feel like my life should be this way. Jesus says, that has to die. If you're going to journey with me, Jesus says, you've got to be willing to put those thoughts, that mindset, to death. To deny ourselves, to crucify with him. That's what Paul says in Galatians 2:20. I've been crucified with Christ. I'm dead with Christ every single day. Even though I still live, it's Christ who lives through me. That's what Jesus says. You got to be willing to make that decision. You got to be willing to put those things to death, to live with me, to journey with me, because I paid the ultimate price. But we also see from Jesus something for us to take from his life is Jesus shows us a great example of being people of deep compassion. It almost is a cliche even to say that Jesus touched the untouchable. I know I've said that a million times, but that's so true. That's who he was. We've seen it some in The Chosen as we see these actors portray these people, but we see even in this portrayal, we see some of the dynamic culturally of the people that Jesus brought closer to him. Matthew, the tax collector, would not have been any Jewish person's favorite person to spend the next 18 months traveling around with. But Jesus said, these are my people. The woman at the well in John chapter 4. The woman caught in adultery that Jesus deals with so gently but so clearly. Engages, I mean literally touches lepers. Deals with people who no one else will deal with. Jesus calls us as we journey with him to be people of compassion. People who will love not just each other. And I say that like that's easy, because that's not always easy, is it? But he calls us not just to show our love for each other, but we have to show our love for the world around us. In a world that is so full of hate and strife and bitterness and angst about everything, we got to be people who show our love. Doesn't mean we bend over backwards for things that are sinful. Doesn't mean we say this is right when we know it's wrong. It doesn't mean we say this is true when we know it's a lie. It just means we do what we do out of love. It just means that what we want to do is show the love of Jesus through our very lives to the world around us who it might not have ever seen it before. Like Jesus did. So as we look at this journey, we can see Jesus wants us to make sure we know that he wants us all in. But he wants us to be all in showing love to people. He wants us to care about people. But we also see, and again, I think this may be the underlying lesson that we can always take from Jesus, is that Jesus calls us to live a life of unwavering faith. When we think of the obstacles that Jesus faced, and again, knowing the end result the entire time, and that Jesus continued to make the steps toward Jerusalem, to make the steps toward the cross, to make this journey to the end of his life, no matter what. Father, if it's possible, take this cup from me. But not my will, but yours be done. How many times have you said that to yourself? Father, I really want to take this job, but I know it's going to be bad for my family. But man, it'll make me a lot of money, but not my will, but yours be done. God, I really want to hang out with these people that are popular in my school, in my workplace, but they're not the right kind of people. I really want it, but not my will, but yours be done. That's what Jesus calls us to. An unwavering faith that says, it doesn't matter to me what the people around me do. It doesn't matter what they believe, what they say, what they how they try and influence me. I'm going to, Hebrews 12, verse 1 and 2, I'm going to fix my eyes on Jesus, no matter what. I think sometimes about how Jesus may have felt in some of those moments dealing with his doubt. When Peter tells him that, I won't let you die, I'll die. I wonder if in Jesus' mind's eye, as he tells him, no, you're going to die, I wonder if he always sees that cross. You know, in that one scene in The Chosen, as they're walking into Jerusalem, or they're walking into wherever it was, and they see the crosses, and you see that kind of poignant moment. You know what's weird is to think about that Jesus had to see crosses all the time as he comes in and out of Jerusalem, really out of in and out of any kind of Roman-occupied city, because that's what they do to punish prisoners. Hang them on crosses outside the city so people know you don't mess with Rome. And every time Jesus saw that, he had to know. That's my ultimate death. Oh, that's just... But he never stopped. And that's what he calls us to be. People who just never stop. He calls us to step out into a world that might not want to hear what we have to say and say it anyway. He calls us to live in a world that probably doesn't want to see how we live and to live that way anyway. To not be shaped and molded, but what Paul says in Romans chapter 12, verse 1 and 2, but be conformed into his will. To be shaped and molded, to be those people who are people whose faith isn't based on how I feel, what I think, how things are going in my life, but on the rock solid fact that Jesus Christ died for my sins. And because of that, I'm going to live crucified for him. The journey that Jesus made to Jerusalem wasn't just the last stop on a trip. It wasn't just the last place he wanted to preach or teach. It wasn't just the last thing he wanted to do. He knew what it was. It was the final steps to the event that he had known for all eternity was coming. I think often too of Galatians 4:4, when in the fullness of time, it was right for Jesus to come to earth. I wonder how, maybe over personifying the Trinity, the Father, Son, the Holy Spirit, but I wonder how that worked. When it was time, it's time. But Jesus knew. He knew what he had to do for each of us. And I hope as you think about his journey and the things that we've seen from him and the things that we have learned about him and about ourselves, things that we can apply to ourselves, I hope you'll make those applications and that you'll always and that you'll remember that Jesus' journey to Jerusalem was an intentional, purposeful way to go die so that we can be forgiven. If you want to begin to journey with Jesus today, you can do that today. You've heard this morning what Jesus did for you. That he died on the cross for your sins, rose again the third day, and is sitting at the right hand of God, just waiting to have a relationship with you. And if you believe that, if you believe that Jesus is who he says he was, that he is the Son of God, and that he is the only way that you can have a right relationship with God, if you believe that, he calls you to repent. He calls you to turn from whichever way you're going on the journey that might not be his way, but to turn and come to him, to put aside whatever's in the way, and to confess him as Lord of your life, confess him as the Son of God who did everything he said he did, and to make him Lord of your life, and then to be immersed in water for the forgiveness of your sins. And that begins your journey with Jesus. If you want to know more about that this morning, let us help you with that. We're going to stand in just a minute and we'll sing a song of invitation. And if you want to come up here, we'll talk about how to start that journey with Jesus. Or if you're a Christian and maybe you've stepped off the path with Jesus and you want to get back in that journey, whatever it is, if there's anything that we can do for you as a church family, let us know while we stand together and sing a song.